Hi, welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of The Ramen Shop, Hillside Kitchen and Cellar, and Tinakori Bistro. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockpool Productions.
On this episode, we chat to Chetan Pangam of 180 Restaurant about growing up in India, moving to New Zealand, and Diwali.
All right, Chetan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We were just talking about this before we started recording, but we go back a wee way. I remember just before I was moving over to Europe, I came back to Palmy to visit family for about a month before traveling. And me being me, I can't sit still. So I just looked for some temp work that I could do for a while and end up in your kitchen and in the King's Gate.
Yep, that was a while ago.
Yeah. It was. I think it was, yeah, about 12 years ago. But it was exciting to meet you again here in Wellington. And you've been in Wellington for what? 6-7 years now?
Nine years.
Wow.
Just before the World Cup, Rugby World Cup 2011.
And you've been at the Copthorne the whole time?
Yeah, pretty much at the Copthorne for my 9 years that I've been in Wellington and been with the same company for almost 14 plus years, coming up to 15 years with the Millennium Hotels.
It's exciting. I can remember you sort of talking about what 180 was and through the time, the more and more it's become more than just a sort of hotel restaurant and your walk-ins and your outside clientele has really developed. Hotel restaurants are not something that I have that much experience with. But what's the difference between a hotel restaurant and a high street or on the street restaurant?
I guess one of the biggest differences is being in a hotel, you have the luxury of having your own guests. So you've always got the people that stay in the hotel. And the perception of people is that a hotel restaurant is usually for hotel guests.
Yep.
And believe it or not, it still is the same. And that was one of the things, or one of my biggest challenges when I moved to Wellington was a hotel restaurant, which we are and continue to be. How do we make that more accessible for everyone that's out that wants to come into the restaurant?
Yeah.
Location being number one. I mean, we've got a great location on level 7. One side of the restaurant looks out to the city, a little bit of the water, and the other end where the lounge is that looks out on the water as well. And for some reason, I mean, even after so many years at the restaurant, I still get people that come up and go, wow, I've been in Wellington all my life and never been up here. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's sort of our tagline of we used to dine for. And my whole idea of sort of coming here was to change that perception to an extent. And one of the things that sort of, we looked at the numbers, we probably in a year, we probably had about 150 to 200 guests that came for dinner at the restaurant when I first started for the whole year.
So one every 2 days?
Yeah, pretty much. And as of last year, we were sitting at just over 15,000 for the year. So that's sort of been the change in the direction and what we've tried to do in the last few years and try and offer people something a little different that I always call it and tell all the people, my staff, that we are a restaurant that happens to be in a hotel as opposed to being a hotel restaurant.
That's great. That's really great. It's very cool to hear. I do want to talk about, you as a chef first and then we'll go back a bit further. You're part of the Chefs Association. I mean, you've been involved for a long time. You head up Wellington?
Yes, so I'm the president for the local Wellington branch of the Chefs Association.
And
I've been doing that for just over 3 years, but being part of the Chefs Association for almost 15 odd years.
Yeah. And to those listening, what does the Chefs Association do or provide to chefs? And
I guess the Chefs Association is sort of a body that we across the country have a presence in all the cities. Just sort of the national office is in Auckland and we have regions in different parts of the country, where it is, it's sort of an association where a lot of chefs just come together. And predominantly, we have had the uptake from standalone restaurants and stuff, but there's a lot of hotel chefs, a lot of chefs that have now moved over to the other side or are teaching, or a lot of suppliers, a lot of hospitality providers that are all part of the association. It's just a networking platform where we sort of get chefs together and try and work towards what we can achieve as a unit, try and mentor the younger chefs that we have in our kitchens. Competitions is quite a big thing where we have annual competitions that happen in Auckland, which are the New Zealand Hospitality Championships.
Yeah.
And also we have regional competitions. We call them the Wellington Culinary Fair here. Up until a few years ago, it used to be at the Wellington Food Show at the Westpac Stadium over the 2 or 3 days. And we've now moved it to Welltec and Le Cordon Bleu.
Yeah.
So we do it in there now, which is, again, try and link it back to where the students and everything are sort of are coming out to be chefs in our industry.
What do you think competitions provides to chefs? You know, I know it's about honing skills and all sorts of things like that, but is it as much networking as it is the competitive side? Or because competition food's a bit different to what, to, you know, a la carte service or anything like that. What does that provide a chef?
I think what I've sort of always found with competitions, because I used to be a competitor myself and I still do compete in a number of things. But I think for me, what I think it provides a chef is, especially the younger ones, is that confidence. As you said, the food, competition food is different to a la carte service or any other service. But I think in competitions, you can sort of get the chefs to work to a timeline, because most of the competitions are sort of time driven, where you've got an hour to prepare this, these many covers and stuff like that. And when you try and replicate that into your day-to-day service in a kitchen, it's sort of like that, but without the bit of, you know, if you run out of time, you don't make it to the end, versus here, if you do in a restaurant, in a real-life situation, you still get to serve the meal, but you might have the customer being a bit irate for waiting too long. And it's just trying to give people that sense of confidence where, yes, their food's good enough. The time frames are sort of, you know, just there to give people an idea of what it is, teaching them a lot of organizational skills, because you have to be organized in a competition. And as we know, in a real kitchen, that's probably the biggest sort of factor of letting some of the kitchens down is not being organized or having the mise en place ready to go. And I think, so that would be probably two of the things. Organization and confidence would be the two things that I think teaches a lot of chefs.
Do you think it gives an opportunity, especially for younger chefs coming through, to learn how to really hone in on a dish and you know, look at how a dish is constructed and the time that you need to put into that dish to be able to create the final result and those sort of things, which I guess in just a number gauge, you might not get that opportunity until you're a sous chef or a head chef.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another way, because in our sort of profession, the more you do it, the better you get at it. It's like that repetition. So when you are preparing for a competition, it's all about preparing the same thing, but doing it different ways over and over and over again. And once you get to that stage where you've done it a certain amount of times, you automatically feel confident. Mm. And also to get to that stage, you have to be organized and you have to keep pushing yourself. And it just comes back to the same things of organization and sort of the skill set and honing those skills. And you know you're confident that you can produce that plate of food in a certain amount of time, in a certain atmosphere, in that given time frame.
So if people or chefs or anyone wants to get in touch with the Chefs Association, what's the best way to go about it?
We've got a website, www.nzchefs, or just Google us. So yeah, cool. And just get in touch.
Let's jump back in time a wee bit here. You're from India originally. Can you give us a bit about your sort of time growing up in India and where you were from and what that was like?
I'm originally from India, born in a district called Belgaum, which is part of Karnataka, which is a southwestern state in India. Household was very foodie. We traveled quite a bit. My dad was in the police force in a very high up police rank, which meant he got transferred quite a bit. So every couple of years, every year, he used to move from city to city.
Okay.
And what we sort of decided was, after a while, there was a lot of traveling. So they decided to travel with my sister and put me in a boarding school. So I ended up studying at a military school, of all things, which was very, very interesting. And that's probably the places where I was in a military school for 5 years in a boarding school. Mm. Which taught me a lot of discipline and work ethic. My mum, she's from Goa, which I'm sure a lot of people know. India and Goa are sort of two things where people know Goa very well. So she's from Goa. So our cuisine, what we would call in India, would be coastal cuisine. A lot of fish, a lot of seafood, a lot of fresh ingredients, a lot of spices as well. And that's sort of how our household was. very food driven, a lot of fresh ingredients. My grandmother, she's just about 90 now, and she still cooks in the kitchen. She still does a lot of stuff. When it comes to making the spice paste, for example, we've got there's a 70, 80 kilo big mortar and pestle with a big stone that the stone alone weighs at least 15 kilos, if I'm not wrong. Wow. And she still uses that, sits on a little stool, puts all the spices and the coconut and everything in there. And she still does that to this day, which is it always astounds me.
Yeah.
Every time I go back home and we try and sort of do that with her. And that's sort of how my sort of food memories were. My mom, my grandmother, from both sides, actually. And Indian culture, hosting and sort of, having people over for dinner, breakfast, lunch, whatever, is quite a common thing. And as you're aware, families aren't one or two people. We're talking a number of people at all the times. And with my dad being in the position he was, we had a lot of guests. There was constant food around because when people come to your house, you make tea, you make snacks, dinner, lunch, whatever it may be. And that's how I sort of started my sort of kitchen journey from a very, very, very young age. Always used to be in the kitchen trying to, what I call, help. but probably, my mom says, wasn't a lot of help. I would make a lot of mess. But yeah, that's how sort of I started off sort of, falling in love with the kitchen side of things, or the food side of things. I've done my hotel management, a bachelor's degree in hotel management. And as part of it, had the opportunity to work in a lot of five-star hotels in India, in Bangalore, New Delhi, and Mumbai, and a few other places. And that was the time that I used in India to travel because, like a lot of Kiwis, I know a lot of young Kiwis that probably haven't even traveled to the South Island.
Yeah.
And that was one of my things when I was young is I wanted to travel across India and explore the food if I can. And I was lucky enough with the hotels that I was working in that I got the opportunities to travel all the way to Calcutta, everything else in between, to Rajasthan, to the south of India, to Kerala, Kashmir. I worked in New Delhi for 3 years at the Radisson Hotel, a huge hotel. And that's sort of how my food journey started, where the Indian cuisine as such is so vast that it just sort of kept on going.
And did you get fully exposed? This is the nicest possible way, but hotels are kind of famous for almost being generic sometimes. Did you really get exposed to the cuisines in those different regions quite well, or was that more you going out and hunting, or the region of hotels in India do a good job of representing their region?
No, I mean, they do. If you've been to any hotels in India or anybody that has, I always say to people that if you want to experience the true grandeur of a hotel and true hospitality, you'd want to go to a five-star hotel in India or somewhere in Asia. Because the general feeling in India would be that if you're working in a five-star hotel, there'd at least be four or five different restaurants with different cuisines. So there'd be a Indian restaurant, a 24-hour coffee shop, a Japanese restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, Italian, French, whatever it may be. So these would be the different cuisines that you would have. And hotels in this day and age, from what I see on social media when I travel back, they've just taken it to another level of having the world cuisine. So you basically would go to a hotel and you'd be spoiled for choice if you want to travel to a country. And the restaurants not only, and hotels not only do the food as authentic as possible to that country or region or wherever they want to sort of do it from, it was more even the decor, the staff, the wines and the beverage. Because when you went to a five-star hotel, yes, the prices would be quite high, but again, you'd sort of target that market that are really knowledgeable about food and that they want to explore and try new things. And apart from that, my whole thing was, there was a few friends that every day off that we used to get, and back then it was only a day off a week if we were lucky. 60, 70 hours was the very stock standard sort of week for us. Start at 8, 9 in the morning, finish at 3, 4 o'clock, take a break for an hour, back into it, finish at midnight, 1, 2 o'clock. And the days off that we used to get, that's when we used to really use very wisely. I still remember in New Delhi, we used to sort of leave the house, me and a few friends, at 3:30, 4 a.m. in the morning and go down to Old Delhi. And there was this restaurant called Kareem's, I think, yeah. And it's they used to do this Nihari Ghost, which was this early morning lamb shank stew with the sort of hoof. And you'd only get it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens at around 4:35 in the morning. And you sort of queue up for that. And you actually go in and sort of do that. So that's how sort of we used to explore. And we used to travel to all sorts of places just for the food and nothing else.
Fantastic. It's a good way to travel. So what brought you to New Zealand? What was the driver?
Again, I mean, when I was in Delhi at the time, this was in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, where cruise ships were the thing, where everyone was jumping onto cruise ships to go work and see the world. And I had a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, who just moved to New Zealand about 6 months, and we just got talking. And I put in my CV and ended up getting offered a few jobs, and a few people were like, yep, why don't you come and work for us? And that's how that came about. Ended up the job that I was going to take was probably a dream job at that time, but the location was in the Bay of Islands.
Yeah.
And moving from New Delhi with a few million people to moving to Bay of Islands was a bit of a culture shock for me back then. So I ended up getting a job at the Heritage Hotel, which was one of the largest hotels in New Zealand back then. And really started from there and never looked back really, and wasn't planning on staying here for all this while, for 18 plus years. But just one thing led to another and just continued to move around the country like I did. So sort of started off in Auckland, bit in Bay of Islands, which I probably would have stayed if I was given the option now.
Yeah.
And then Hamilton, Palmerston North, and then Wellington. But
Palmerston North.
Yeah.
Good times. What was your first impressions of the New Zealand food scene when you got here?
I mean, 18 years ago, I don't know if from what I could remember, it didn't really strike me as I don't think embracing the food that we know now.
Mm.
I don't think there was a lot of people that would embrace what a lot of the chefs, including yourselves and a lot of other people, that are doing. Mm. So there was a few ingredients floating around here and there vaguely that were sort of what people were calling as indigenous New Zealand ingredients, or and we remember using a few of those kelps and the horopitos and the kawakawas back then, but that was probably as far as that went. But a lot of Asian influences were sort of what we would see in the food that was around in a lot of cuisines. Or a lot of sort of restaurants, and a lot of food that was getting served around New Zealand back then. And looking at it now, I think it's changed dramatically to what I think I remember 18 years ago to what it is now.
What about just as a culture? Because having spent some time with Indian people, but any culture that's got a traditional cuisine, the passion around that cuisine is generally pretty strong. And, you know, people are willing to argue about what's the right way, the wrong way, and it gets quite in depth. I don't remember that in the New Zealand food scene, even, I guess 15 years ago.
I mean, as sort of, you know, we're coming from a very, very structured hotel sort of life, being in the military school, very disciplined, getting trained, like, you know, doing a proper degree for 3 years, learning everything, all the basics, all of that sort of stuff. Coming to New Zealand, it was a bit of a chilled out, relaxed atmosphere. Everything was just, sweet as, don't worry about it, it'll be fine. A lot of that sort of stuff, and which was sort of, initially, it was a huge culture shock for me, where sort of for us, if you work over a certain amount of hours, it's a health and safety thing, and, you know, we want to make sure we take care of you, and can't do this, and you can't do that. And there was a lot of that, which was, definitely, as we know, health and safety is a huge part of our day-to-day life now, and it's very important. But back then, it was, very, very different, where Indian food, the memories of Indian food in New Zealand at that time was pretty, Yeah, pretty
insulting.
Yeah, pretty insulting, pretty crap. And I mean, you know, one of the times I think one of the first few days that I was in New Zealand, I with a friend, I happened to go in a food court and I was offered to have some Indian curry and some naan. And to this day, I've not eaten in a food court. I haven't eaten Indian food in a food court ever. It sort of just put me off completely. And then that's sort of when after a few years looking at it, I mean, the Indian food is pretty, there's a huge room for improvement, I think, overall.
You're so diplomatic.
Yeah. Well, it's not about, I don't think it's diplomatic. It's just, I mean, yeah, there's some great people that are sort of doing some great food in New Zealand, like, you know, especially the sort of Indian take on it. I mean, in Auckland, there's a few restaurants. Obviously, there's Sid at Cassia, and there's another place which I've been to a few times now called 1947, which is sort of very, very good. There's another place called Paradise, which specializes in kebabs and biryanis. But that's sort of as close as what you can sort of get to authentic Indian food that I've sort of experienced in Wellington. I mean, you know, a lot of people ask me every day, it's like, oh, where do you go to eat Indian food? And for me, I sort of, you know, some people expect a big list of restaurants and places that obviously, I mean, you know, my wife, she cooks at home. So we don't cook Indian food 7 days a week. It's probably once or twice a week. But the restaurants that I would sort of go to here would be, there's a hole in the wall near the hotel, actually, in front of the Embassy Theatre.
On Kent Terrace.
Yeah. It's called Taste of India. I remember going there about 15, 16 years ago. And I still go there and it's still sort of the same. There's a place in Lower Hutt called Chili Masala.
Yep.
They would be sort of my two Indian restaurants that I would go to if you wanted to try something different. And that's sort of where it pains me sometimes when you sort of go to certain places with friends or places that you haven't been and you see the standard of the food or the style of the food and what sort of comes out. And it's quite, quite depressing at times.
You hold a lot of events at 180, but you do some Indian focused sort of banquets in that. Is that a chance for you to kind of go, hey, this is how it should be?
Yeah. And I guess that was part of my sort of, my old style of cooking is sort of, you know, I call it sort of Indian French. And then sort of the team that I have is, again, I have a few Indian chefs, I have a few French chefs that work, and a lot of the French ones or any of the non-Indian ones, after they've been with me for a bit, they'd be able to make a very good Indian dish just because of the things that we do. In terms of events, there's a lot of events that we do that are Indian-focused, a lot of Indian weddings. That sort of want that bespoke menu as opposed to here's our standard menu and you choose from this or this is what you can have, versus for me, it's all about that opportunity to sit down with people and actually talk to them about what they feel like having or what they want to try, what they haven't tried or something that, you know, we can explore as well. Because sometimes people expect the hotels, especially having the same stuff every day, and you just keep doing the same stuff over a period of number of months, years, whatever it may be. But for us, it's always been that we sit down with people, go, right, what do we want to do? Last year for Wellington on a Plate, we did an event with Nalini from Lot 8. And it was focused around the vegetarian food. So it was we called it a temple event, with pure focus on vegetarian food from different foods that are served in a temple, not just a temple. We're talking about a Indian Hindu temple, a Gurdwara, a South Indian temple, and also done in a way where it wasn't about silver service or pre-plated. It was food was sort of the second helping of the food was served in buckets where you'd have big long tables and people are all, and that's how we tried. We tried to replicate that experience.
Yeah.
And again, people sort of don't get to have any of those things here on a day-to-day basis or very often. And we've always tried to do something a bit left field for a lot of people here. But for us, it would be something that would be a very common thing back in India.
That's great. Hey, I'm quite interested. You've got a young family. You're very much established here in New Zealand. How do you keep hold of, I guess, heritage you know, in the kitchen at home with the kids. And like, is that important to you to pass on some of those sort of traditions? And I know you travel home at times, but, you know, here in New Zealand, carrying through your heritage and your wife's heritage and passing that on to your family, is that something you think about?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of us sort of, you know, bringing up the family pure in New Zealand life. My wife, you know, she's probably going to hate me for this, but when we got married, the only two things that she knew how to make was a cup of tea and a chapati. Yeah. And that's probably as far as she went in terms of her culinary prowess.
She married a chef. She did the right thing.
And that's sort of where a lot of people, a lot of our friends and people that we know, you know, initially, especially the newer ones or the ones that we've known for a while, every time sort of we used to be invited to someone's place, it was like a very nervous sort of atmosphere because we've invited you. So yeah. The kind of food that we make, I hope you like it and stuff like that. And it's the same for us when we have people over. We generally now not try to do the same food that we've probably done in the last year or whenever they've been to our house. We always try and explore new things or try and do something different. My son, he's 9, going on to 10 soon. And again, he's sort of very much into cooking and wants to cook and wants to do a lot of stuff. And he's probably very lucky because he's probably been to some of the best restaurants with us in New Zealand, like, you know, or anywhere we travel. We always take him, and right from a young age, I think one of his earliest food memories he still remembers was probably when he was about 2 years old, I think. This is at a Wellington on a Plate event. We took him to the oyster salon that Rachel and Martin Bosley, and he sat on the counter of the truck and had his first raw oyster.
Yeah.
And that was sort of, you know, and he's hooked on to oysters since. And that's one of his, oysters and salmon are two of his sort of favorite things to eat. And my daughter, she'll be 3 next month. And again, she sort of is, we try and sort of get in all the ethnic foods. We don't cook anything, or we've never cooked anything separate for our kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you're going to cook Indian food, it's never let's do less spicy or let's cook something separate. We try and give them all of that sort of stuff. Spices is another thing. I mean, even at home, we ground a lot of our spices as and when we need it. But then we also have a stash, which my mom sends from when we sort of go traveling once every 2-3 years back home. She packs a lot of that stuff, which is her blend of spices that we sort of use in certain things. And yeah, sort of, I guess our whole culture around food is quite strong, where in India, you generally never sit and eat a meal by yourself.
Yep.
It's always with people, with friends, with family. And we try and sort of keep that going as much as we can, even here, where we generally never let the kids eat alone.
Yep.
We sort of, you know, we all try and sit together whenever we can. And yeah, food's sort of the, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great.
I mean, point.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Hey, one of the major reasons we asked you to come on is basically to try and shed some light on Diwali for us. Can you, give us a bit of an overview of what Diwali is?
Yeah, so Diwali or Deepavali, in some places it's also called Deepavali. So Diwali is one of the, probably if not one of the, it is the probably biggest festivals that we have in India. The simple meaning, or we call it the festival of lights, or it is when sort of a victory of good over evil. That's sort of why that festival is celebrated. It goes on for a long period of time traditionally, and there's a lot of other festivals that lead up to Diwali. So it's currently the festival month that's happening, or months, as you'd call it in India, where there's always something happening in some part of India.
Yeah.
And then the big one is the Diwali. And then it's basically, to simplify, it's called the Festival of Lights. Homes, offices, any workplaces, you know, back home, you'd have them, you clean your houses, you try and sort of, you know, light your houses or light a lamp or a diya, which are generally traditionally a oil lamp in sort of like a clay, which is made out of clay. And you also invite a goddess of wealth called Lakshmi into your house. And so wealth and prosperity, you sort of, you clean your house, you light your house up. And you share it with friends and family, and that's where you make sweets and savory dishes, and you sort of invite people over for snacks, dinner, lunch, whatever it may be, breakfast. And the final thing would be firecrackers.
Yeah.
It's just to sort of, you know, celebrate at the end of it.
Celebrate with a bang. Food, obviously a big part. What are some iconic sort of dishes that come along with the festival?
In India, and it still happens, is every part of India, every state, almost to a point where every household has its own unique take on certain things. If you were to, even when it comes to spices, when you say garam masala, what my mom makes a garam masala to what my mother-in-law makes to what my neighbor does, it's completely different, and it's always got something different. But I guess some of the key things that you would find across in sort of in India, across most of the places, are laddus, or something which are sort of little round dumplings made out of semolina, lenten flours, clarified butter, sugar. So those laddus would be sort of, you know, one of the main ones. Halwa, which would be another one. But in general, like anything sweet and, yeah, high in calories.
Oh, fantastic. Are you doing anything at the restaurant?
Yeah, so we have a number of events that happen which are privately booked by different companies which are focused on sort of on Indian food during that time.
Mm.
But apart from that, so for about 2 to 3 weeks, depending on when Diwali falls, we do a Diwali promotion around a thali.
Mm.
So we do like a little set menu, but the main course is a thali, which has a few different options: a vegetarian thali, a chicken, a lamb, and this year we're also going to be doing a fish thali as well. And that sort of a thali is a meal where sort of, you know, it's normally a stainless steel, a silver plate, or a gold plate, depending on what household you're in, where you have a selection of at least 5 to 8 to 10 to 15 to 20 or plus dishes, all served in the same plate, right, all okay. the way from sweet, savory, everything yeah. in one sort of one plate, and you eat with your hands.
Mm.
And so that's sort of what we do
cool.
with sort of it's a three-course dinner. Thali is the main highlight.
That sounds great. Is there anything from an outside perspective, so someone that's not from the Indian community, in terms of, say, people are attending Diwali and wanting to know what it's about and things like that, or are there any cultural norms that maybe we should be thinking about and considering to be respectful of the culture?
Not that I can think of. It's like any cultures, obviously, you know, you have to respect what that culture holds dear to them, and I think it's all about where and what you go. I guess with Indian culture, or with festivals in general, when you're invited to someone's house and sort of you're presented with the food and everything else, is just you know, sit back, relax, enjoy, try and sort of experience new, because a lot of the things, especially if you're trying it for the first time, might not be everyone's cup of tea, because yeah. it's not something that you'd eat on a day-to-day basis or you'd find in many restaurants.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, it's just about enjoying yourself, going in with a open mind and trying to explore as many new things as you possibly can. Because one of the things I've noticed with a lot of people, I don't know if it's certain people, but in general, people tend to sometimes just stick to the safe stuff. Yep. And when you go to festivals, when you go to restaurants or menus, it's very sort of, you almost, rather than exploring something new, you'd sort of go, I know that sounds familiar, I'm probably going to stick to that. But I think because the Diwali festival is coming up at TSP
yep.
soon, so I think every year there's something new. But, and that's something that I always sort of, because a lot of some of the restaurant chefs and that do that, that do the catering, they're always asking, oh, what do you think we should do? And I always say the same thing, is like, why don't you try to do something different that nobody does? Because most of the times when you go there, if there's 20 there, 18 have got pretty much
the same thing.
The same things, yeah. just done differently.
I think that's just a great piece of advice in general, is to try something new.
Yeah.
Give it a go. Yeah. Sometimes you just need that soul food that you know and understand and that, but going out is an opportunity to try something new and be exposed to something new. And that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah, one of my friends who's sort of a beer connoisseur and he works for a company that does beer and all that sort of stuff, he always says, this is a few years ago, if you go out, if you want to have a drink of beer, don't try and stick to just your normal Pilsners, lagers, or yeah, like this, but always your first drink has to be something that you've never tried before.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of always go back to what you want, but you always try. And I sort of try and do the same with the food as much as I can, is try and have something or try and explore something that I've never had first. And yeah, if you like it, great. If you don't, at least you can say that, you know, I've tried it.
No, that's great. All right. Okay. One last thing from me. You've been in New Zealand how many years now?
18 years.
Okay, so when the Black Caps play India, who do you support?
Tough question. it's usually my wife, she works for ANZ, so usually what we try and do is we try and split the household. Okay. So sort of she wears sometimes the Black Cap shirts and I wear the India shirt. But yeah, for us, yeah, it is both. Both the teams, and again we just say that let the best team win on the day. and we try and obviously it's Black Caps all the way if they're not playing India, and vice versa for India as well, but if they are playing each other, then it's let the best team win.
Very good. Hey, thank you so much for joining us today, Chetan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Asha. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.